Hello and welcome to Juvenalia. I'm Alan McGuire. With me today is Sarah Marie Griffin.
Hi,
Alan. Hello, how are you?
Very well.
Good. Our guest today is contributing editor at The Pool and a writer whose first book is coming out soon.
Spring 2018.
It's our friend Caroline O'Donoghue.
Hi.
Welcome, Caroline.
Welcome to the show.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to be here. This is a very big moment for my year.
I can't tell you how pumped I was to meet you. I was just like, I love when the internet comes to life.
This is going to be my X Factor roundup kind of thing. When they do the like my big dominant moments of my life. But that time you were on Juvenalia, you're like, oh, fireworks.
We'll put some chasing cars underneath this, yeah.
Excellent.
So what do you want to talk to us about?
Well, I'd like to speak to you about my obsession with 90s sitcoms. Although 90s is probably broad, probably 90s, early noughties. It's kind of hard to know where one begins and the other ends stylistically. But they were something I loved consistently as a kid, as a teenager, and watched in my early 20s and just have always kind of loved. None like deeply, but just kind of broadly as a genre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was the same. Like, if it was an American comedy, I was probably watching it.
Yeah.
And not really, I don't necessarily remember much about any of them, but I watched all of them.
It's like you've absorbed the oeuvre in a way. And because there was so much crossover and so many like of these brilliant like character actors that just seemed to wander in one set and onto another, that they just all kind of existed in their own universe, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the Marvel Continued Universe, you know? It's like all live, or like Stephen King, like they all live in the same world.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to watch American TV.
Why not?
Really?
I'm an idiot. Should we had this chat with The Simpsons? That's why I don't like Simpsons.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was...
Oh, I thought it was specifically Simpsons when we talked
about that. Well, Simpsons is kind of a pinpoint because it makes me feel stupid because I don't get what's going on because I didn't watch a lot of other American TV.
Yeah.
Do you know? But I was allowed to watch one American sitcom, which was Frasier. So that was the one...
Was it because it was highbrow?
I think so. I genuinely think that my mom and dad... Well, it is smart, but my mom and dad recognized that it was smart and were like, yeah, I wasn't allowed to watch Friends. I'm aware of Friends. I have a weird osmosis... Friends understanding. I've watched it since, but when I was the age in which everyone had Friends pencil cases, for example, I was not permitted to watch it. Like, it was like not a thing. So Frasier was the one that broke through. So
well,
it's through that
Frasier
lens
is both a superior example of the genre but also very much apart from it at the same time, like even the way it looks is different.
I don't think it's representative of that kind of style of sitcom.
Well, I went back and watched Cheers, and I know Cheers is the predecessor to Frasier, and I kind of had to stop eventually because I was like, this is super dark. This is really dark. Yeah, Diane. No, bad touch. No. Stranger danger. Don't want that. It's not. This is not romantic. This is very stressful for everybody. It's a journey. It's of its time.
I think that is the thing with sitcoms and possibly why... when you go back and it can be very uncomfortable to look at them, like even from a casting point of view, like what I love about sitcoms is that everybody, and Tina Fey makes a great point of this in Bossy Pants, where she says like the whole thing of like putting attractive young people in your sitcoms is new and is also like Friends is the exception that proved the rule, but it's not the rule. People like seeing weird faces in sitcoms, like Frasier, for example. Everyone's got a weird face. Cheers, everyone looks like a fucking melting candle. Like,
A sexy melting candle, but a melting candle.
It can be a real problem when you look back and you're like, oh, you know, where are all the non-white people? Like, and it can be
remarkably homophobic.
And the thing about sitcoms is that you, even though some of them date brilliantly, and Frasier is one of them. They can also be so reflective of attitudes at the time because they had to, because they were weekly comedies reflecting on
They were weekly. Like, they were recorded in a studio.
Weekly?
Like, what is that? Like,
and then we got them like a year and a half later.
Yeah. And then we got them forever on loop at nighttime on RTE. Yeah, that was it. Or TV3. They were always muted in the background somewhere.
Always, like, and I always think as well that maybe perhaps like why the traditional sitcom has become so unfashionable now, and it is deeply unfashionable. It always has to be like a dark take on a sitcom. It can't just be a sitcom. Like, when's the last time you ever heard a laugh
American
track
Horror
in any
Story,
game?
Manhattan?
But it's because like if you're not going to involve technology in your comedy now, it's weird because like, oh, obviously they would text or obviously they would call or get then by including the technology, you automatically date what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I mean, you write dystopian stuff set in a different kind of world, but like, I had this problem when I was writing my novel because it was important to me that the character had an online presence that meant something to her. But I was like, how do I not date this, you know?
Like, and I think references do date things, and why things like Frasier stand alone is because they are void of...
Frasier did that deliberately.
Really?
They didn't mention any brands ever or current events on purpose.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Really? And I imagine quite a few of them did that.
Friends had celebs and stuff.
That's true.
Yeah, Fraser didn't. Fraser was completely this capsule.
It was
capsule.
All about like timeless good taste because it was so about taste, that show. And
Obsessively about taste.
And they were always like referencing like Puccini operas and stuff. It was always like very timeless sort of references rather than like, oh, what's happening with the White House?
Al Gore, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Friends thing is really interesting because like the behavior in Friends dates Friends, but not the trappings of the story or the way they talk. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So the homophobia and whiteness and weird shit is what dates it.
Yeah.
But not...
the jokes are still essentially funny and they still work as jokes. And which I think it's why what's quite works though. So the generation below us are so into Friends. You know, the kind of 18, 19, 20 year olds are all obsessed with it. Like I've got some friends in London who work for Comedy Central and they're like, we just stick on Friends because it's so hard to get any cut through on new stuff. Everyone just wants Friends marathons all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's just so depressing. Do you know what
it's
I mean?
It's a time capsule.
It is. Yeah. It absolutely is.
Yeah. Like simpler time vibes.
But we didn't feel the same way about 80s sitcoms. Really?
Oh, no.
I couldn't even name you an 80s sitcom.
Because weren't 80s sitcoms all about people who were grown ups? Weren't they about families?
Yeah,
people
like
who drank
who's
in bars.
The boss and, well, Facts of Life, I suppose. One. I used to watch that a lot, but I remember nothing about it. I wouldn't be hankering to watch a load of it, you know? Yeah.
I think the weird thing of, I mean, I definitely felt this way. I think I got so obsessed with them because I really like I did not get along with school at all as a kid. And I just it's kind of that sort of like that spazzy nerdiness where you're not even clever. Do you know what I mean? the kind of the lowest echelons of being a bit of a nerd where you're just a bit spazzy coordination wise and you can't really learn things well. And you're like, oh, where do I fit in? So I used to pull sickies all the time.
Girl, who are you talking to? Like, this is meet your cousin, like, yeah.
And luckily, like my mom was one of these moms who's just like, ah, you're a good company, so you can stay home. And
yes,
like,
moms. Moms. Yes, moms.
My mom was so like that. She was like, oh, sure, stay home and chat to me. So like, I used to just watch these sitcoms all the time. And I just always felt that like, oh, it's okay, because when I'm a grown up, I'll have this cool life like all these characters have. And it's like, it's that sort of aspirational thing of like, oh, cool people in the city being older and buying things.
And having radio shows.
And having radio shows. God, you guys, the dream is alive.
Like, real talk, not even joking. Yeah. Like, genuinely, that was it. It was like, that radio fantasy was real. Like, it was very, that was the thing for me with Frasier. That's the dream job.
The fact that, like, Frasier, like, his work day, going in the morning, you'd be there for like 2 hours.
Say something shitty to Bulldog. Say something mean to Ross. Then say something shitty to all of Seattle over the air. Then go home and drink sherry.
Yeah.
With your brother. Say something shitty to him.
Going around talking shit to people all the live long day in Cafe Nervosa.
Oh, Cafe Nervosa. Book Central Perk. Cafe Nervosa, come on.
Everyone in Seattle went to Cafe Nervosa. It really felt like a genuine location, didn't it?
Yeah.
There was something.
The little mezzanine at the back where they went to have really specific conversations, and sometimes they'd sit in the window when Daphne and Martin were with them.
Close friends where they had their sofa.
Where they just walked in and owned the place. Yeah.
And it was all like, basically your eye had to go to the friend all the time kind of thing. Whereas like, there was things happening around.
There were four places they stood. Yeah. If you look at the set, okay, so the extent of my Fraser bullshit is going to come out right about now. I also do not know how it ends. I have never seen the last three or four episodes.
It's very satisfying.
I didn't watch it because I don't want it to end. Right.
Fine.
So I've liked that with a lot of big TV shows like Red Dwarf that I love and things like that. I don't know how it ends. I don't want to know how it ends. I'm done. I'm okay for it. But I do have a weird amount of Frasier, like, not trivia, but, like, I have looked at it a lot.
Yeah.
There are fucking five places they stand in Cafe Nervosa. So there's the window seat, the one in the mezzanine, the one that they have really serious conversations with near the coffee bar, in the line.
Yes.
And in the door. That's where the action takes place. That whole coffee shop felt so real because they moved through it like normal people would.
And because it was busy some days and it was quiet some days. And like, whereas like with Cafe Central Park or whatever, Central Perk, sorry.
Perk, yeah.
It felt so flat and stationary and it felt like a set. Whereas Cafe Nervosa felt like a place you could go. And I read somewhere as well that they said it in Seattle for several different reasons. One of which was to get him as far away from his Boston as they could so they wouldn't be a slave to Cheers. Which I find wonderful.
Yes.
Which I believe was the same thinking behind Joey. But let's not think about that. And also they said like, where would Frasier go? And they're like, okay, the sort of coffee scene in Seattle was sort of very big at the time and there was kind of an alternative culture. sort of thing happening. And like, oh, of course, we'll put him in Seattle. And it's kind of the grayness of Seattle, I think,
Mirrors the humor that
it's
they
a totally different color palette to every other sitcom, I think. Frasier.
The browns and greens.
It's like a little bit more 70s. You know? It's just a little more 70s.
Also, there's no stools in Cafe Nervosa. They did that on purpose to separate it from the bar stools and Cheers.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like they really went out of their way. I think Kelsey Grammer especially wanted, he didn't even want to do a spin-off originally.
No.
It was supposed to be about
you clearly have the answer to this.
You can tell it though.
He was originally supposed to be like a paraplegic doctor living with a streetwise like Latina maid.
Yeah.
That was the idea.
No.
Exactly. Kelsey Grammer was like, just no. No, thank you.
Oh God, that didn't happen.
But then what happened, I believe, was that they said they will take the Fraser Crane character out of Cheers. And one of the writers had recently had his dad move in with him, who had suffered a stroke or something, and he was dealing with that on a personal level, and so that was going on. And this, I find this incredibly a very, very clever detail. They realized that in an episode of Cheers, Frasier had said like, "Oh, my father was a biochemist who died," and then later in Frasier, they said like, "Well, of course I said that because of how we felt about each other," kind of thing. Like,
It's so well written, it's so good.
And there's this other, like, it's much later in the, and people give out about Frasier about how after Niles and Daphne get together, how baggy it becomes. But there are still wonderful moments, and there's this moment where Jane leaves. She became pregnant, but they didn't want to give her a pregnancy story.
Oh, the fat arc is so real, man. It's the Daphne gets fat arc is so weird.
So for anyone who doesn't remember, Jane leaves, gets pregnant, but she decides that she's put on an enormous amount of weight, which is always
and is carrying large shopping bags in front of her body, as we all do.
But it's always like such a cruel thing to do to an actress, with like, oh, she's just fat now, kind of thing.
But they're are literally laughing at her in it. Yeah. They are awful to her during it. But isn't the reason in the plot that she puts on the weight is because she's too comfortable with Niles? She's freaked out by him. Isn't that the
I think what it was like. Niles had her on a pedestal for so long, and she couldn't deal with becoming a human to Niles.
The pressure.
So to push him away from her, the pressure we got to, she just ate and ate and ate. And that just feels like such an interesting character decision that you never see. Like, you just never see the interior mental lives of women that way, particularly, I mean...
Daphne.
Daphne is kind of the zanier character. And it's interesting how she was introduced as being like, oh, she's the zany psychic from Manchester.
Yeah, she's the maid. She's the zany maid. She's the zany foreign maid.
She's also a physiotherapist. Like, who gets a maid who's also a physio?
Physiotherapist. Like, lucky, well, these extremely wealthy psychiatrists, apparently, you know? But that arc about Niles also, I think, that dates it. Like, all of Niles and Daphne dates it. I mean, like, talk for 18,000 years about Niles and Daphne, and like that being like a mother duck and a baby duck, it imprinted upon me. That arc culminates in them finally sleeping together, and I think that dates it as well, that there's this huge conservatism about sex in that way in the show. Like, Frasier kind of is Frasier doing the bone dance all day, all night and all day.
So he's had sex with every actress from the 90s, like from what's her face from Desperate Housewives,
Terry Hatcher.
Terry Hatcher was his love interest, and like Isabella Rossellini popped up once.
Loads of people. There was like a very long line of women, but Niles was always treated as this sort of, again, this could be queer subtext. take a shot.
like the way that Niles interacts with Daphne is the way that you see gay men interacting with Dolly Parton. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, it's my God, it's like phenomenological, nearly.
And I've watching how the actor interacts, it reminds me of a RuPaul interview I once listened to, like, once, where he's talking to Marc Maron, and Marc Maron's doing his like old guy in his 50s, like, "What is it about you gays?" kind of thing. And he basically says, "The one thing I don't understand about queer culture is how come," and it's a very fair question if you're not from that community, "how come you pick these certain women to sort of like put on pedestals and you just love them?" And Divas. RuPaul like thought about it, and he said, like, "It's about vulnerability." He says, "You look at Judy Garland and she's like 4 foot nothing, and she's been kicked around by life and by men and by studios, by institutions, but she still opens her mouth and that voice comes out." And I feel like that's when you get Daphne and Niles, you get this woman who's like a maid and a psychic, and she's just sort of
from a working class background in Manchester, dealing with all these insanely rich people all the time and obviously freaked out by them, but just kind of going,
it. And he just that she comes in with this sort of the story and this vulnerability, and I think Jane Leaves does such an incredible job in that role. A very Uncle Tom role for a Manchester woman. She adds such depth to it.
She's an American, Jane Leaves.
I think she was born in London.
Was she?
Yeah, she was. She's a Gillian Anderson type, you know.
Where is she from? Who cares? You're great. She's good. Yeah, you're good at everything. But yeah, that, and it's interesting to have not have. There is another universe version of that show, which is about Daphne and from her perspective, because she's a working class status quo in an extremely wealthy world. So her perspective would have been fascinating if we had seen a bit more of it. But she is a sexy alien.
She is a bit of a sexy alien. That's very true. There's a very good interaction because her relationship with Marty is very interesting because he's a blue collar cop who she's the only person he can talk to in that house.
Yeah,
watching his dog like.
Oh,
and they
Eddie.
Have this lovely relationship. But even though there's a scene where she's like, oh, you know, I worked here for 10 years, and every few months I would throw out your oldest pair of underwear and buy a new pair. And he was like, oh, I just thought I had good underwear.
Yeah.
Like she is so alone in that show.
She is. Where are there are briefly gal pals.
Her and Ross get on.
They do, but there is Daphne specific gal pals in the early seasons who show up and she's like gonna have a gal's night in. And then they're plotted out. But and Roz, I mean, Jesus. I mean,
Roz is unreal.
Like, talk about an early icon, like, you know?
Like, single mother, radio producer who's like always seems to be getting pretty, like, raises and promotions.
Who's killing it. And again, doing the bone dance more than Frasier and like loving her life.
She loves
like,
it.
She's getting her life. It is amazing.
Her relationship with Niles, I just love.
Oh my God. Talk about treating someone like an alien. She's just like moderately disgusted by him. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. This is like this real. Like catty tension between them. That's like fun.
It's just what I think Niles is the center of that show in a very big way, kind of thing. Like Frasier, as much as I love him, he kind of has two modes. He has the like I'm being Shakespearean, I'm Macbeth, and he has like oh I'm a normal person who thinks normal things. Like, that's his two modes. But like Niles, like he's always like shifting from one thing to another, and it's such a quiet performance. But it's just like little lines.
The physical
and little
humor
looks.
Is excellent. Yeah, the physical humor is so good. Like
I could just watch his face dance all day.
And the
there's
one
episode where it's like three vignettes and Niles' one is completely silent. That's just him trying to earn a pair of pants.
Oh my God.
And he keeps
it's
injuring
when he's living
himself.
It's when he's living in the Shangri-La. Yeah. Yes, I know the very one.
Oh,
encyclopedic, Alison. Yes. Encyclopedic knowledge.
I forgot about the Shangri-La episodes.
He's an amazing physical humorist. And I think I listened extensively because, again, I'm really a fucking nerd to Kevin Smith's podcast about Frasier, Toss Salad and Scrambled Eggs. And
I lost my patience out of that. I was listening
so
to
did
it.
So did I, because when you find out all the writers are assholes and you're like, I don't really want to listen to you talk because you're mean.
I don't like Kevin Smith.
No,
me
everyone was mean. It was like, I don't want to listen to mean dudes talk about stuff. I want to listen to nice gals talk about stuff. So what I did learn from that, though, was stuff about Maris and the great mystery of Maris. That they chose never. The not showing her became a choice because they were going to.
Yeah.
But then they made her this huge caricature
that defies like physics.
Defies physics. Yes.
Like she literally she was he tried to go running after her in the snow, but she left no footprints. She
and those the time he gets the dog, Niles gets the greyhound or the Afghan greyhound type dog that looks like a bleeding nightwalker, and they put a little tiny pillbox hat on its head and go, "Hey, Maris," like because it looks like a ghoul. Like she becomes her invisible presence is an amazing.
And so many shows have tried to do that since have tried to do the Maris Crane thing, and I never totally buy it.
You can't do it. And
interestingly, Sybil did this, if you remember Sybil.
Yeah.
Christine Bransky's Marianne, she had Dick.
Yeah, her ex-husband. Yeah,
Dick.
Dr. Dick. Yeah.
That's only how I say that word.
And Just Shoot Me as well.
Who is the same presence in Just Shoot Me?
Nina Van Horn's friend, Binny. Never properly seen. She had a best friend who she always talked about her friend, Binny.
Yes.
I don't really believe she was real. And again, never seen. She was seen once with bandages on her face after plastic surgery. That was it. So all three of those shows all
have. So maybe it's a 90s trope. Maybe it's a universe, a rule of the universe, you know, that like there will be.
It does seem to be, doesn't it?
Once every second show, there'll be someone who you never see.
Yeah.
You know?
But no one's ever pulled it off quite
not quite like
that. I don't know if anyone's ever talked about this before, but the naming of characters within Frasier is insane. Like, who's called Frasier? Who's been called Maris since that character?
You can't. You could never do it. I love Daphne, actually. Daphne's one of my favourite names.
Yeah.
But
Daphne Moon.
Daphne Moon, come on. What a pleasing set of syllables.
Every,
good tweet.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a good tweet. Just Daphne Moon. Beautiful.
But I never talk about, well, I do a little bit, I suppose, lately talk about my novels, Fairy Vampires, about fucking robots and shit. The last names of the family in it are Crane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Be
so,
good.
one person I know clocked
Crane's
it.
Crane's a wonderful last name for Crane. Who they are as people.
Oh, it's so proud. It's brilliant. It's a great word. Like, I love it. I love it. The language of Fraser is a whole thing itself, but the naming is timeless.
It is.
That's what it is. Mm. It's without time.
And it makes you so interested in... And the great sort of unseen relationship within Fraser, more so than Maris, is with Marty and his wife, which I always think would be a fascinating drama. Like the kind of the highly cultured woman who wants to the best for her sons, married to the blue collar cop who's kind of befuddled by them constantly. Like even like the early episodes of Fraser are like theater. They're like you're looking, it's like that first episode, it's like watching a play.
Yeah.
Like just this man like trying to get to grips with his father he's never understood, and now they live together and he's become like... His disability is referred to in strange ways because we almost never see it. It's like he's got a walker, but it seems to take up so much of his life.
He is impacted by... His journey and his wholeness is impacted... Like, his identity is impacted by it. And part of Fraser being an asshole is that he just ignores it. And he'll be like, oh, and his cane. Like,
his chair and his dog.
The episode where he switches out the chair is... Like, I didn't really... get it when I was young, but now it's like, oh, that's a huge thing to do to someone.
Faculties of a disability.
Now that we've had like older relatives living with us and stuff, you're like, that's a massive thing to do. And it's so important to let them keep something if they're moving in with you.
And especially if they've lost so much.
Theirs, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's mad. And watching Room to Improve when they build granny flats for people. Like, you always like, make the granny flat the best part.
Yeah.
Because this is their house. So they're giving you their house. Give them a nice bit, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like we just need to rename what they're even called. Like, granny flat just feels like it's like a home for destitute women or something. Yeah. It's like...
Granny flat. I did hear an in-law.
Nan Palace.
An in-law.
A what?
An in-law. That's what they're called. They call them the States. It's like a little gaff outside your graft, an in-law. Hmm. Is that interesting?
That's good.
Slightly better than granny flat. Yeah. It is exactly for your in-laws. So... It's kind of slightly better than granny flat. It also has a nice sound to it.
But the interesting thing as well about, you know, Marty. Marty is shot in the hip, like, what, two years off retirement or whatever, before the show starts. And all of these sitcoms, if you think about them, they all seem to happen just after something big has happened. That's when they begin. Like, even Just Shoot Me, the whole thing is...
It's the delete the first chapter rule, isn't it?
It is. Mm. Yeah, absolutely is. Where, he has left sort of Cheers and his father is now disabled. In Just Shoot Me, it's all about how she's lost her job and her father has married her childhood friend.
Yeah.
Like, which is such a...
Icky.
A strange dynamic for a TV show to start with. Do you know what I mean? Mm.
It's weird that Anchorman actually ripped that off, the way she got fired. Because she got fired by feeding false stuff into an audio.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Just Shoot Me, the first episodes are on Netflix.
But only the first
6 of 149 episodes are there. It's like
that's the thing. These shows ran for so years. Long.
Decade.
There are seven seasons of Just Shoot Me.
They didn't even have to do that well for them to just be on always. Like,
and that's why I sometimes worry about the knowing so much weird shit about Fraser. How did I watch 10 years of that show?
Yeah.
How did I consume? I have box sets, man. I will just put it on.
It's a lovely sleepy show.
Oh my God.
So I put it on while you're going to sleep. Like,
dude, vocal tones, man. Like, I feel like I cycle in and out of Frasier, The X-Files, The Fifth Element, and then back. Those are my three sleepy places.
And the thing about that is you realise as well, you've heard Toss Salad and Scrambled Eggs songs probably 500-600 times in your life.
Have you
ever? More than any of your other favourite songs.
Have you ever read the analysis of what it means?
Oh yeah. Yes.
It's fabulous.
It blew my mind. I only have read it like last year.
Unbelievable. If any of you listeners haven't read it, please look it up. We actually probably shouldn't even tell them because they should go look it up because reading the writing of the person who wrote that song is mind blown.
It's so interesting as well with that thing where like they wanted to write a theme song that didn't directly reference Fraser Crane's name. Psychology as a profession or anything about the radio, but you're writing a jingle about a radio therapist called Fraser Crane, and because it's almost like because it's a taste thing, because it has to be a tasteful theme song for a tasteful show about snobby people.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's all about these like metaphors about tossed salad and scrambled eggs and like what
that,
you know, it's amazing.
It fits, you know, it's part of that aesthetic. Like it belongs to itself. You know what I mean?
Like, if I can't imagine the pitch went very well, but then it just works because it's part of the show.
Yeah.
So that's part of Fraser now. You know, it makes no sense to explain, to say it out loud, that it's kind of a weird spoken, scatty jazz thing that Kelsey Grammer sings himself.
Yeah, and that's weird.
That's just metaphors for the show. It's like, no, don't do that. Life keeps bringing me back to you from Just Shoot Me, you know?
Where everybody knows your name. Yeah. Come on, like do something epic.
The Just Shoot Me one's so weird because it's basically a Sheryl Crow song.
That is, yeah, yeah. I never thought about that. That is weird.
Life and keeps bringing me back to you. The thing is, like, they don't do it anymore, but the Wikipedia page for all those shows, they actually mention the end credits song because they're iconic. Same with Sybil's one about the...
Oh, my God.
If you know any parts, and was it...
Oh, that, it's going to be insane.
Won't you tell me how it ends? Won't you tell me?
Nice work if you can get.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And if you get, and that's Sybil singing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. The really interesting thing about the Sybil show is, like, particularly when you think about now, when like Louis C.K. has a show called Louis, Marc Maron has a show called Maron. Like this was, you know, early 90s. Sybil Shepherd, you know, a very respected actress. Like, she'd done some very big things, and like also she'd done the comedy thing, had a show called Sybil about a struggling aging actress in LA.
Yeah.
And she always talks about it in her memoir about, like, for me, it was like a parallel universe. If I'd never got Moonlighting, if I'd never met Peter Bogdanovich, if I was just all these
Is she
people
the
that
Hannah
I know,
Hogarth of the 90s?
She the what?
Is she the Hannah Hogarth of the 90s?
Yeah. She is the Hannah Hogarth of the 90s.
You know, is that what that
but
was?
But in her 40s and
But in her
40s.
But, yeah. But you know what I mean? Is it someone living out an alternate version of their lives?
Kind of, yeah.
Possibly, yeah. Because there was a very, very funny show, but it dealt so much with, like, just the degrading things that she had to do to make a living as an actress in her 40s in that city kind of thing. And that thing of, like, you've been at a job long enough for everyone to kind of know what your deal is, but not enough for anyone to respect you at it. And no, I don't think anyone thinks about how soul-crushing that is. And, like, there's so many... Whenever you see, like, those character actors that you just kind of see in everything, and you're like, I hope they're making a good living and have a nice dog. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Bit of back garden space.
Yeah. I hope it's all right for you.
Yeah.
It's a weird... That's a weird...
Yeah, she's kind of one of those people where you look up their IMDb and there's, like, one CSI, one Law and Order. Just, they've ticked off all the boxes and they're kind of like,
yeah.
Now, where,
like,
do we go?
Wendy Malick is a very good example of that.
Yes.
Who was Nina in Just Shoot Me, and she was Martin's girlfriend in Frasier.
Which one, Jerry?
The one he ended up
for
marrying.
For last few series.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Oh. I hope she's just, like, just doing well. You know?
Yeah.
Hope she's got a regular Pilates class and, like... good set of friends. Yeah. Big glasses of wine.
Mortgage sussed.
Yeah.
I think, feel like maybe Sybil was too famous to do Sybil then. Because, like, film people doing TV is a thing now.
Yeah.
But I was watching an episode of Sybil the other night. And I was like, she looks like Veronica Lake or like a 1940s person in this film. And you can't stop looking at her as, like, this out of time person. She's like
two
movie star. They haven't figured out how to do her down for TV. They're still making her up and doing her hair like she's doing a film.
That's very true. I hadn't thought of that before.
It's
she is very,
weird.
Very stylized.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And similarly with Veronica's Closet, I don't know what your experience of that show was.
Oh, yeah,
at all,
so loads of it. Yeah.
Where it was Kirstie Alley, but they weren't quite sure what to do with Kirstie Alley because she was just the knockout on Cheers. Was it Cheers she was in?
Yeah,
first?
And she'd done Look Who's Talking about it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they were like, we don't know what to do with our knockout once she turns 30. So it was the stylizing of her was like, let's put her in lots of like plush velvet muumuus.
Yeah.
Like, and there was kind of like a weird desperation factor. Like, she styled her up like a
so much
romance
hair.
Novelist.
So,
so
much
hair.
Yeah. Like this. She's like on the
She's like a pageant like, mom almost. You know?
Yeah. Like
yeah.
There is,
she was yeah.
Where's the
mom?
Weave? Can't see it.
Yeah.
It's not this before HD, can't see the weave. It's all just
yeah.
Even like the colour scheme of that show was just all I think of is like purple. Like,
it was very lush. I didn't watch too much of it. Again, it was part of the things you're not allowed to watch, but it was
well, it was quite sexy. There was a lot of sex
it was sexy.
In it. It was sexy in that she owned this lingerie business and she was filled with like surrounded by people who were having sex and talking about it kind of thing and gay people. So I don't know, it's very interesting how those shows dealt with gayness, you know?
Yeah. In a different time. They either didn't.
Yeah,
or they centered it and accentuated it in a way that was closeted. Do you know what I mean? There is a campness, but let's not talk about
like
it.
Like the restaurant critic in Frasier,
exactly,
who has a beard. Gil, he has a wife.
Yeah, oh, does he have a wife?
Yeah, and that's the joke is that he talks about his wife, and everyone's like, "Okay, Gil." Plot twist: the actor who plays Bulldog is gay. The actor who plays Martin was gay. Mm. David Hyde Pierce.
Yeah,
and there is this running joke.
Do you know that David Hyde Pierce and John Mahoney, who plays Martin, they're both the godparents to Daphne's kid?
Oh,
isn't that my God!
Most beautiful thing you've ever heard in your
life. But have you heard the Kelsey Grammer story?
Well, I know he's got a tragic life, but I'm not really that sure of the details.
So there's an amazing episode of Frasier where Roz talks about Lupe. What's her last name?
Oh yes, the famous starlet who like wasn't successful and killed herself or something.
And she wanted to become like beautiful and immortalized within her death, and it was like this. Yes. This like there's a parable anyway that she tells about her, in to Kelsey Grammer, right? And I feel like this is the weird parable that I tell about horrible lives, like that it's he was 13 years old, and this is borderline like reading the Wikipedia entry off, but I remember somebody told me this word of mouth, and then I went and looked it up and I was like, it's true. His dad was killed in front of him when he was 13 by this random like interloper in their house, like a crazed burglar type. And later on in his life, I think his brother was like eaten by a shark during a scuba diving accident.
Oh my God.
Whoa. Like that grade of things. Like it was, it's surreal. It's not like regular tragedy. It's like lightning strike.
It's like
shark eating
Final
accident.
Destination Kelsey Grammer edition.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's still a remarkable actor, and he has this, I mean, like he has two modes, sure, but like still kind of love him. You know, he's still good. Yeah. He's still become iconic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I absolutely love the film Anastasia, and his work in that is wonderful.
Oh my God.
I was going to talk about Anastasia for this, but I didn't know whether I could get that much out of it or whether you'd want to.
You're coming back and we're doing it because there are some bangers in that movie. Anastasia's deadly.
Stop.
Once Upon a December. Stop. Like, that's Bluth, isn't it?
Who?
The non-Disney house.
Oh, I thought it was Fox. Yeah. I thought it was Fox Animation.
Is it? Well, we'll find it. That's for that episode. That's for that return visit episode. Anastasia is like, look, come here. It's deadly. But yes, Kelsey Grammer is iconic in his own way, even though Frasier wasn't likable.
No.
The character.
No, not at all.
He was an asshole. He sold Niles out to Daphne. It was him.
Oh,
I did it. Sorry.
It
was an extremely passionate
like
moment.
A benevolent thing. It was like, she's getting married and you need to man up and just be in love with her forever.
He took too many fucking painkillers. And
is that what it was?
There was this amazing, like they were really, really brilliant at farce. Like this is where we were talking about it being like theatre. Mm. That Daphne overheard Frasier while high, because he did something to his back, talking about being in love with Daphne. Daphne registers it as Frasier being in love with her, and it's like, no, this is awful. So there is some awkwardness. Mm. And at one point, because she's a physio, he asks her to give him a massage, and he's super high. And he said, and he tells her that Niles is in love with her. Just before she gets married to Donnie, which kicks off the whole at the wedding on the balcony, Orangina fiasco that happens later.
I think you can call me Niles now.
Fasten your seatbelt, Daphne.
Like,
fasten your seatbelt, Niles.
Oh my God.
Woo! Like, never over it. Never over it in my whole life.
The small lines that David Hyde Pierce delivered as Niles, like, obviously his whippersnappers are brilliant, and he's like the best put downs on TV, like, bar none.
Oh, he's awful.
Like,
his
small, like, emotional lines that, like, there's such kind of economy of words. Like, there's another, I know you haven't seen the last episode, but basically the last words. The last words that Niles says to Frasier, they shake hands and he says, "I'll miss the coffees." And it's like, oh God. And when I think about the finale of Friends, when it was just them all fake crying and turning in their keys to the apartment, I'm like, no, that's how you do a parting shot. Like,
his emotional economy.
And
style. Cohesive style.
Style. And I think as well, what we're kind of missing now with those long running sitcoms is, and it reminds me of actually something that Peter Bogdanovich once said in an interview about the studio system, and about how the studio system was terrible and it basically kept actors as slaves for 30 years.
Child slaves, often.
Slaves.
Killed over.
But the one sort of artistic advantage of the studio system was that you could write with someone in mind. And so you could write for Humphrey Bogart's cadence or whatever. And I felt like that's what they were able to do with sitcoms. They could write for that actor because they knew them so intimately well. And that's why you could give David Hyde Pierce, "I'll miss the coffees," and it becomes like this huge moment. And
huge
like,
moment.
And I don't think, because sitcoms just die on their arses now, don't they? Like, I don't know what's happening with that whole genre.
The two-hander's gone. The set pieces are gone. I don't know what it is, but it's not.
And the whole kind of thing of like, oh, you know, there's someone in the bathroom, but we're trying to get them out before anyone sees, kind of thing.
Theatrical work, basically.
Yeah.
Like, plays is gone.
They were plays.
Like all the stuff in the cabin, all of the cabin episodes.
Yes.
Are unbelievable exercises in humor of space. Like, yes. It is so fucking stressful watching people run from room to room. Everyone's trying to do the bone dance. Only two people want to do it. And there's like eight people here.
Oh,
and
God.
There is so much miscommunication and like nine doors and everyone's running around. It's timeless.
Because, I remember that episode for that kind of running around, that great farce plotting, but also because Kelsey Grammer is shirtless in a lot of it. And
oh,
like,
my God, he's a large man.
Weird.
What is happening?
I know.
You never see Niall shirtless, though, she says, like, retrospectively.
You do see the painting of him as Pam, though.
That's pretty funny. Way to undermine my massive crush, thanks. You know? But yeah, he is complete. But he's also so neutered. Do you know? Whereas Fraser is presented as this hyper virile, like, fuckboy of Seattle. You know, fuckboy Crane over here.
Premier fuckboy, Fraser Crane.
Oh my God.
That is
literally him. Yeah. And he's hyper virile. And then Niles is presented as this sort of, like, he has this impotence to him, nearly.
Yes.
And his kowtowing around Daphne for years and the mystery of Maris. And he's like, oh, God, love him. Like, do you know what I mean? You kind of feel for him a bit, don't you?
And I know David Hyde Pierce himself didn't come out until the early noughties,
no.
But yeah. I think with so many things with actors in Hollywood, it's like, it's a known kind of thing.
Yeah.
We don't talk about it or whatever. But it does, I mean, I know I've said this already, but it does very much feel like their relationship is very, you know, queer icon and lover kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he does treat her like this icon. Like, every time he talks about her, it's just like, oh my God, goddess of the sea.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't talk about her like, he's like, oh, Daphne's
a person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, what is a body?
Yeah.
How does a body work? Like, it's wonderful.
What
like,
is
it's so innocent in that way, but like, also totally not, because he's like, a lot of the physical humor in the early seasons is him just being like,
creeping
craning his neck. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, why doesn't it make me feel uncomfortable when I see him creeping on her? Is
I
it because
know.
He's kind of neutered in the show?
I also think he's neutered in the show, and also I think problematic faves. Every so often I'm like, everything is problematic, but I'm like, I don't fucking care, I love this shit. Because I love it
though.
Because I love it so much that I don't feel threatened or hurt by it. Because I genuinely take joy from it, and I won't, like, I don't know what it is. There are rare enough things in the world that wokeness and critical theory have not fucking destroyed for me. And Fraser is one of them. And I'm sure someday someone is going to present me with a, well, I have this theory, or here's a fucking think piece. And it will get destroyed for me, but it somehow remains pure. Even the weird, awkward bits.
Yeah.
They don't feel awkward.
They don't.
They're just
kind
of fucking funny. Like, why is that? Like, I don't know. Maybe I have to hand in my feminist card. Maybe we should like call the feminist police and I'll get arrested now for still enjoying Niles and Daphne. But I
well,
do.
This is like how I, you know, we were talking about how I religiously listened to Brady Snellis's podcast.
There
it's like,
you go.
Oh God, I don't know. I just, I hate you, but I like your vibe.
Yeah. I like your, I don't know. You'll write a think piece about it later. Like, I don't know. What is it? Like, there are some, I think we're, like, there's a lot of, I feel like we want not, like, this is why we can't have nice things. It's something I feel like people throw around a lot.
Mm.
But I think there's a place for nice things. Like, you can look at something and go, that is fucked. Kinda.
Yeah.
But that is great also.
An interesting trivia thing I read about Frasier. It's more like a contextual thing. But like, so Frasier came out in 1993, I think, was the first episode.
Uh-huh.
The next year, the term metrosexual was coined.
Whoa.
Do you remember that
word? Is
it term
that old?
Yeah. Do you remember metrosexual?
I thought it was a 2000s thing.
No, it was
coined
in the 90s.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I almost feel like that kind of ushered that word into existence.
It's a contributing factor for sure. It was a massive success. Like, that show was huge.
Yeah, it's like people started like, I feel like every couple of decades, people just pipe their heads up and go, men are looking after themselves too much. Like, men
stop
are getting expensive haircuts
yourselves.
And I hate it.
Are you wearing a ponytail on your head?
Yeah.
What is that? That inordinate hatred towards man buns is something that really worries me. I'm like, but it's just a bun.
Yeah,
like, what is the
there
problem?
Was a thing going around of people like chopping off man buns or whatever.
Oh my
it's
God.
Like,
I would,
is that right?
I would end somebody's life if they cut my hair off. That is.
You have very good hair, I must be said.
Thank you so much. It's fried. I got it done this week, but it's still fried. Thank you. But no, I would. Could you. The violation that is, like, that's an assault on somebody's. I can't cope with it. It's awful. But it's a fear of the feminization of men, is what it is.
And it's been going on forever as well.
Part of it, there's a tweet by do you know Siobhan Thompson. She's
no.
an English comedian. And she said, I think it's cute how all the men decide every year to get, every 5 years to get the same haircut for 5 years. And it's because the man one is such a visible one. Like, but every man will get the same haircut and they'll have that haircut for
the
3 years.
The fade is happening right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just a super visible thing. that everybody's doing. And I think it's more that than a feminization. It's just,
it's almost like they're breaking rank
everybody.
Or something. That's
yeah.
what it is. Like, ooh. And we talk about so much about like what the patriarchy does for women, but it's that what the patriarchy does for men thing, like the way their clothes are designed are almost military, like this kind of idea that that's what we do. We, you know, the way that collars are designed is like that you can't move your neck properly kind yeah. of thing. And
what
the way,
even
and
the fuck
starching.
Is a necktie?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like,
but every time men break rank with that kind of thing, there's like, the men are getting bad like women are.
Like the girls.
Like the girls. Like there's this, my dad has this book of sort of like celebrity journalism from the first half of the 20th century. And there's this like Hedda Hopper column from like the early 20s where she's talking about Rudolph Valentino and like what a travesty it is that the men are being destroyed because they're all following this girly man's example kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, they're all like powder puffing now, they're all jetting their hair back. It's like every couple of decades we're like, no, men, don't break rank.
Don't break rank.
Don't break rank.
My husband had that for a while, and I was like, every so often, I'm like, I fucking take responsibility for this. But like, he got V-necks, like lovely deep V-necks, and he's very tall and very slender. So the V-necks look deadly on him because he's tall and slender.
I'm horny
but,
right now.
He's a beautiful man. But they're fucking cool looking. The décolletage is a fucking beautiful body part, regardless of the gender of the
everyone
individual.
Everyone loves a good exposed clavicle.
Good fucking clavicle situation, right? Mm. The abuse he got.
Really?
Yeah. Just slagging. Just like slagging. So, do you know? But just...
I feel so bad for men, Alan.
Can you not just stop slagging each other for wearing cool clothes, please?
I wore a V-neck t-shirt to the gym once and felt like a dope.
You're not a dope. Clavicles.
Yeah.
They're deadly.
I don't have clavicles.
You fucking do.
Not really.
You do. They're there. We all do. That's yeah. body parts. It's how your arms work. It's how your arms are connected to your body bone or whatever. It's all good. You know? Like,
yeah.
My
boyfriend there a while ago, he bought a cream blazer that looked savage on him. He's like quite a broad, tall guy. And it was like, it's that kind of thing that I love about men where like, they're just a 3% more camp than they're allowed to be. And I find it so sexy.
Oh my God, can we talk about that please? Because yes. I am fucking upset. Like that, you have nailed something that I've been trying to talk about for so long. Like the atmosphere in the room just went up a notch, by the way. Whoa. So I went to see Cabaret in Broadway with Alan Cumming as the MC. And I'm sitting there going,
so jealous.
Is it incorrect that I am admiring you? Like, but he's bisexual as well. So I was like, yay, my fucking people. That whole show was about bisexuality. I feel like I learned more about my own orientation by being in that theater space and watching that piece of theater about ambiguous sexuality than I did from living in San Francisco for 3 years. And that's saying something. But that slight queerness is remarkably
it's the
hot.
Sexiest thing.
What is that?
It's why everyone fancies Scar and no one fancies Mufasa.
Work. Oh my God. That's it.
Scar with his eyeliner and his little, like, mincing little hips.
I think I'm gonna have to leave the room and recollect my thoughts because it's precise. It's exact. And, like, that's what it was with Niles. It was this ambiguous queerness. Like, it's this liminal, like, orientation space that is gorgeous. I don't know what it is about it.
Do you know any women who actually fancies, like, the army man? I feel like men fancy the army man.
Yeah.
I don't get it at all. However, Jamelia did a music video when she was like doing like girl drag as an army man. That was the sexiest thing I've ever seen.
Yes,
but that's the most I've ever been into that look.
Yeah, I feel like there's a Daniel Craig spot in my heart at all times where it's like I just want him to pick me up with his enormous shoulders and like throw me into some hay.
Oh, being picked up and thrown into a place.
Stanley
Lovely,
Tucci
yeah.
arms. Huh? Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, like big fucking arms. Like,
do you know what? Sorry. Sitcom needs to come back and Stanley Tucci needs to be at the helm. He needs his own sitcom. He needs his own Frasier.
Are you listening, Stanley?
Stanley. We call it the Tooch.
It's us, Stanley. We'll watch it. We'll tweet about it. We promise.
I would crowdfund the fuck out of it, Stanley Tucci.
Oh my
Tucci.
God, kickstart me to the next country. Like, yeah, it's such an interesting kind of character and role. And I think it really... I'm sorry, my head is still spinning.
But also like, if you think David Spade's character in Just Shoot Me is such a weird thing, because he the whole like crack with his thing is he's a male secretary for a very overbearing, like almost Donald Trumpy magazine editor, and everyone's sort of like making fun of him because he's sort of effeminate, he's sort of blonde, and it's the most likable David Spade has ever been. And the rest of the time he spends like being a sort of Adam Sandler fuckboy. It's like, why couldn't you just have been the slightly put upon vulnerable young woman man?
This, so fucking news radio, right? Dave yes. Foley plays this fucking 24-year-old radio executive who moves into the second most listened to radio station in New York or whatever it is, right? And the cast is glittering. Like Phil Hartman was in it before he passed away. Andy Dick, Joe Rogan, like began there. Moira Tierney. Like I absolutely love this show, and I loved Dave Foley in it. Like he is, to all intents and purposes, like he's so feminine. Like he's so feminine, and there is an episode because there were what was wonderful about this kind of sitcom, and again, it's something that's dead now, is capsule episodes where it's like it's news radio, yes. but it's on the Titanic. Mm. It's news radio, but it's
yes.
space. And they had a Halloween episode where Dave Foley rocks up in immaculate drag. He is an incredibly beautiful woman. Like, I mean, we've all got, like, she says, assuming we all have feelings about David Duchovny and Twin Peaks, extremely specifically, but. Dave Foley is beautiful as a, and it's part of the gag, but everyone also accepts that he's super beautiful as a woman and that he's excellent in drag.
Yes.
Like he's like Shantae you stay forever, basically, you know. And
I was about to bring up RuPaul, where it's the, I think people have very complicated feelings for the men on the show when they're in their talking heads or they're not in drag kind of thing. Mm. Like I've had so many like problematic crushes. Like, where oh God, I fancy you as a man, but also maybe as a woman also.
That show is a dream. I love it.
I wish you were old enough for us to do an episode in it. We're old enough for us to be nostalgic about season one and we can talk
well,
about that.
Like Bob started drag because of RuPaul's Drag Race. So
yeah.
I mean that's
he's within the school.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
he is. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's got its own mover and its own movement. Like, it's within itself. And that's why season 9 is so interesting. She says, immediately dating this podcast.
Yeah.
That's why it's so interesting, because it's transcended form. It's no longer reality TV. It's people going into reality TV to play for reality TV instead of people playing a competition in reality TV. Do you know?
Yes.
So,
because it is Twitter's best friend race now.
Oh, it is Twitter's best friend race. I am here. I am here. Like, we actually shouldn't even talk about it because it's still happening. You know what I mean? It's like, we can't record anything until it all finishes up. I'm still too fried over it.
Yeah, we need to talk about the season afterwards because I've got some feelings.
Oh, look, I have a lot of critiques, but good thoughts too. But I think the thing about men and fashion in sitcoms and things like that is because like they did define fashion for so long. The Jennifer Aniston haircut.
Yes.
You know, like so much crawled out of those sitcoms and into Irish culture.
And even Chandler in his vest.
And even Chandler and saying things like, okay.
Yeah.
Who the fuck in Ireland talked like that before that? Do you know? Or hello. Irish people don't talk like that.
No.
That is literally a linguistic transplant that we assumed as young people. I didn't fucking watch Friends and I was saying it because everyone around me was saying it. And if you didn't say it, you're speaking a different language to everybody else. Do you know? And with Frasier and the metrosexual thing, they spent a lot of time talking about clothes. Like a Bret Easton Ellis, American Psycho grade time talking about fucking lapels and shit. Like they are into their clothes.
Yeah, and I love that they share a personal shopper. And the personal shopper has to keep lists of what they both wear so they don't have incidents.
Unbelievable. And Martin's amazing flannels. And like Daphne's floral dresses and her leggings and her scrunchies and shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like I have been the foreign maid in wealthy households in America. Like I was not quite Daphne Moon, but I was definitely like hilarious foreigner who cleans our house. And I took it. You know what I mean? Because what got me through those situations, I'm like, just be Daphne, man. Just be Daphne.
Do you remember they did a costume episode? I think they were always going to some kind of masquerade ball or whatever. So there was lots of costumes that happened within Frasier. But they go to a literary costume party and Roz goes as O from
The Story of O. Which again is so specific.
It's so specific.
And it doesn't land until years later and you're like, Jesus. And Daphne, isn't that the one where Daphne is booting it around in that big nightie like Kate Bush?
Is she?
Like, is that the one where she's like wearing the floaty white nightgown?
I feel like that's an image that we branded in my mind if I'd seen it, so I haven't seen that.
I feel like it's what episode is it? No, I think it's one where she's staying in Niles's gigantic Mariscaf.
Yes.
It's one of the times where they nearly get together but they don't, and she's wearing this fucking awesome fucking Heathcliff ass looking nightie.
Yes.
Do you know?
I do. Now, and there was like this thunder and lightning and
like
they're stranded
by the fire and they're like having this deeply romantic tense conversation which goes nowhere.
The fact that they were able to keep that tension going for 9 seasons. Was it 9? I'm pretty sure it's 9. But like 9 years of like back and forth of will they, won't they, like this poor man is in love with this woman and will never be happy kind
and
of
he is
thing.
Trapped by this mystery beast that is a ghost and a woman and a ghost and like a millionaire
and a waif and a
and
wraith.
A wraith. He's married to a wraith and he's Lilith.
Lilith
is the counterpoint to Maris, because Lilith is fucking amazing.
And whenever she is present, she's everything in the room. She sucks it all up.
She's, you know, I always thought I wanted to grow up to be Daphne, and then I fucking saw Lilith and went, no, it's you. I want that power.
Do you remember, did you ever watch Will and Grace?
Yeah.
When the actress who played Lilith was a character on the show, and Karen and Jack, whenever they saw her, they were like, oh, Lilith, you're so dry. And she's like, actually, my name is...
Actually, that's not who I am. And she had a very specific kind of delivery. Like, she just talked without any... It was brilliant.
Hello. My name is Alison Spittle. I'm a podcaster, yeah. That's the, okay? That's the one. We got it? Hi, wait there. Hi, my name is, hello. I don't know why I'm sounding American. Hi, I'm Alison Spittle. This is my actual accent. I present the Alison Spittle Show. You can hear that every Wednesday on the, not every Wednesday. Don't be too keen. You can hear that every second Wednesday on the Headstuff Podcast Network, which you can hear on headstuff.org. Thank you.
On Will and Grace, I think that was like the last functioning sitcom, right?
Yeah, I think. And Jesus, are they threatening? They're threatening to bring that back, aren't they?
They are bringing it back.
There's still Two and a Half Men and Big Bang Theory, but they're like a whole.
I don't observe
other...
Big Bang Theory.
Oh, I don't either. No. Although, I don't believe in it.
No, it doesn't.
Although, like when it came out, I was really into it.
Oh, really?
I know, that's the thing about the way sitcoms reflect on the time in which they come out, and in that Frasier comes out a year later, Metrosexual is coined, and then like Big Bang Theory came out, and then a year later, everyone's acknowledging
nerds
in a very public way, kind of thing. Mm. And I don't know what relative to The Social Network or whatever, it feels like they all came out around the same time, where everyone was finally acknowledging the lives and power of nerds. And if you always felt a little bit spazzy anyway, The Big Bang Theory felt like something happening in a mainstream space where you're like, oh, more spazzes. Like,
it me,
and now and then just like now I just see like. People fucking wearing Bazinga t-shirts and I want to die. Like, but there was a real, I remember like chain watching the first eight episodes being like, oh great, a new sitcom for me. Mm. Well, it wasn't for me because it was just some blokes talking about physics, like, but do you know what I mean? It's like the attitude. And it's the same with Frasier. Like it's,
and
you,
what
you
is
want
it?
To aspire to something else.
Because you make a really good point there. Like it isn't. It's because it's just some blokes talking about physics. But Frasier is just some blokes talking about opera. And what is it that makes Frasier feel more welcoming rather than alienating? For a show about fucking shitty dudes. Because I was just thinking about Lilith there. Niall slept with Lilith. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah. Did they not have like an affair?
I would so watch that though.
They fucking get with you. Totally.
What does it look like?
Cracks fingers, writes fan fiction. Never have in my life. I swear, I actually have it. I'd be like, that's one of those things where I say in a fake voice and it makes it sound like I have, but I actually haven't. Yeah. Or I should have.
That's
realistically.
Very surprising. I feel like
you would
be the demo.
Yeah, and I feel like I should. That's a novel. I feel like I'm going to wonder kill it because I genuinely think that there was an episode, Niles and Lilith, and I'm going to get fan fiction.
Well, at some point, that is also the thing of the sitcom where it's like everyone has to fuck everybody eventually.
Oh, you have to go through the rubric. Does he sleep with Ross?
Like Friends, I think, literally just had a lot of checkboxes.
Yeah, an unexpected visit from Lilith stirs all passions in Frasier, and new ones in Niles.
Sorry, I talked over you. What are you
saying? Sorry, that was me doing it. Sorry, that was a garbled thing. I was like shocked. I was like, I was right. There is an episode, a room service cart that had two separate breakfasts on it mysteriously winds up set up for one as the episode ends and Lilith sits in the bathroom eating her breakfast. Niles, they do spend the night together. Yeah. They did the thing. Fuck Niles for doing that shit.
Nice one, man.
We did see him topless. There we go. That's why I remembered
it. Did we see him topless?
Yeah, he's chilling in the bed.
It was beautifully lithe.
Oh, it was lithe. Yeah. It was like
a heron.
Clavicles for days. Like a crane. Sorry, I talked over you guys. What were you saying?
Can't remember now.
No, it's gone.
No, you just have an image.
Yeah.
The episode was called Poached Eggs and Other Small Tragedies, I think it was called. Do I want to do that?
Those bloody titles in Frasier as well, which I never understood at the time. There was like weird private jokes. There were like memes almost within the episode, like weird private jokes the show was having with itself.
Yeah,
there was no reason for them to be there, like dividing the acts. And it was always like act one, act two. It was literally they were playing into that theatre thing. Mm. But to your point earlier on, there were so many things about Frasier that should have been alienating, but weren't. And I also think that about, I really love Silicon Valley.
It's great and it doesn't go far enough. Like I was there, man. I was at those weird parties where Kid Rock is playing and everyone's looking at their phone, that level of shit. I've literally been at those parties and they don't go far enough. It's too precisely real. Like the first series was uncomfortable. Me and my husband were there going.
It's such a good show though. The level they go into, like, they're like, oh, I'm going to explain my compression algorithm for 10 minutes of screen time and be completely charming throughout.
The polyamory arc had me screaming because at least the rule is at least every 10 minutes in San Francisco, someone's going to try and convince you to be polyamorous and explain what compersion is to you.
What's compersion?
It's the opposite of jealousy. It's where you feel happiness from seeing your partner experience pleasure with someone else. And there was a scene in Silicon Valley where that is explained. And me and Kerry were like,
oh my God.
Oh my God, it's happening again. But I think there's a utopian look at it, you know, I think.
Yes.
But seeing that played back in Silicon Valley spoke to how precisely it was reflecting that area of the world at that time, where there's this performance and efficiency thing. And sure, polyamory is more efficient because you get to have more fun with more people, right?
Of course.
And that's the attitude that appears. Yeah. Now, I'm not casting any judgment. This is my disclaimer text. No judgment. Honestly, I'm really happy that people are doing whatever they want. Like, I really think it's interesting.
I feel comfortable to talk about it and publish things about it and you know, and be open about it.
I'm delighted that people are, that we are deconstructing the patriarchy, because that's what polyamory is part of. You know, I mean, it's deconstructing monogamy is part of deconstructing the patriarchy. Awesome. Maybe not for me, but totally cool if people are doing it. And I genuinely mean that. However, that moment where it's talked about in Silicon Valley was such an It's a perfect snapshot of the culture. And that for me was when it really started ringing true. Like the way people interact with one another and this hacking the system and hacking relationships and hacking, what's it, disrupting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the word, isn't it? Yeah.
So that's part of how the worldview from Silicon Valley is a disruption worldview, which is amazing. Like, it's absolutely not up my street now at all. Yeah. But, I'm grand. I'm a bit shy for that. But it's fascinating.
Could we count, I suppose, you know, we are talking about 90s sitcoms or whatever, but like, could we count Silicon Valley as being a sitcom? Like, what counts as a sitcom now? Does it have to have a laugh track? Did Frasier have a laugh track?
No,
it was a live studio audience.
Oh,
audience.
My God, yeah. It's live. Could you imagine having been in that audience?
With that dialogue as well, like delivering that dialogue, which is like full of fucking weird ass Italian references or whatever in front of a live audience.
Who is in that audience? Yeah.
Who is there?
Who is their warm-up comic? You know? Like, who was there? Like
Jane Ann Garofalo or something.
Yeah. Who was there? You know? Like, that would have been, that's the great mysteries, man. You know? Because it is before our time. We were kids when it came out.
That's true. Yeah. But it never feels that way. It's the kind of unique thing about being Irish is that you do tend to get things a couple of years later, or you definitely did in the 90s. So things hit you later, you know?
Your context is really strange, I think, for it. And which is why things like Silicon Valley are brilliant, because it's very current.
Yeah.
And there's such pleasure to be taken in current.
Even the credits in Silicon Valley were like, in season one, there was like a big Uber balloon. And now in season four, the lift balloon is the same size as the Uber balloon.
That's
and stuff
good.
Like that.
That's so clever. Yeah.
So that currentness is also very, very powerful. So I can only imagine what it would have been like living in Seattle and watching Frasier at that time. You know? Like,
That's a whole different story.
Consumer experience.
Yeah, because I think that is sort of the two touchstones people think about with Seattle is Nirvana and Frasier.
Right.
Yeah. And they're such warring concepts.
Oh my God, they're so different. Like, Shauna Scott is from Seattle.
Yeah.
So sure. I am every so often like, oh my God, you're from where Frasier's from. Like, no one cares about that but me. You know, it's if I did end up, my husband went up, Kerry went up for work once and I was like, go and find Frasier. And he's like, it's go not real. I'm like, I don't fucking care.
Tell me you found him anyway.
Tell me a story about Lilith and Niles.
That's it. But I did see a cute little trivia piece where it's like they rented that Eames chair. You know what I mean? Like, they couldn't afford an Eames chair when they were setting it up, even with the amount of money that they were throwing at sitcoms in the 90s. And you'd wonder what the returns on that was.
Yeah. But broadcasting was different back then.
Pardon?
Broadcasting was so different back then as well.
It really was.
Like
having a slot mattered in such a huge way that will never matter again.
I know. That's a really good point, that your airtime doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
Because it's all rewatches and streaming services. Yeah. And
like Maeve Higgins, Fancy Vittles kind of thing. Yeah. I wouldn't have
Fancy
a fucking
Vittles.
Clue. Like,
Fancy Vittles was amazing.
It was unreal.
Oh,
but
my God.
I only discovered it in the last like 2 years. I don't know when it aired. Like,
it was on
knows?
Like 10 past 11 at night on a Tuesday. Like, yeah. Not, didn't even air it with the comedy block on Network 2, which was the like 7 to 10 Monday nights. It was another, its own other thing. And Soupy Norman as well. Probably the funniest thing RT has ever made.
And it got shushed off.
It was off, yeah, in the middle of the night somewhere. Yeah.
What's that about, like?
They just don't...
It's something about not having the courage of your own convictions. It's like, we'll give you the money to make it, but we're not going to show anyone.
No,
like,
this is...
You're my weird friend.
This is
from
weird.
Home.
We're not going to show a weird thing, yeah.
Like, it's a...
You're my estate friend, not my school friend.
Oh, yikes! Yeah, but we only talk to each other when we're on holidays and in a year. Like, do you know what I mean? We only talk to each other.
That's how RTE treated Maeve Higgins, and I hope they... Fucking, it turns to ashes in their mouth because she's doing
she
so
is
well.
She's killing it, and I
she's
love
killing
she's
it.
Sound
every
off,
damn day
she's
of the week.
Gas. Her writing is amazing. Like,
hands up, man. Fucking
hands up.
but Fancy Vittles is very, very, very funny.
It was lovely. It was just a lovely, cozy, funny, nice thing.
So warm.
So warm.
Yeah, and that fucking fourth wall thing. You know, it's a unique.
And just her and her sister
thing.
Just like putting cocktail sticks into sausages, like it's just the most soothing thing ever.
It's like ASMR.
But like, to me, that's how I feel about like sitcoms in general. It's like that. It's that soothing. Like, I know the color scheme. I
know the texture.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's familiar and it's good. And like, I was actually just thinking about the Eames chair there and the chairs in Frasier, like the Eames chair and Martin's chair. And weirdly enough, listeners who obviously don't know what the inside of the Juvenilia studios look like, but the curtains here are yellow and not unlike the fabric on Martin's chair.
Yes.
So when I was living in San Francisco, we lived near a big fuck off thrift shop, like massive charity shop. Like, I was getting my life. But on one of my days in which I was getting my life, I found this chair, which was a Martin chair. It wasn't a Lazy Boy. It was like a round bucket chair with that weird yellow carpety Martin fabric on it. Mm-hmm. And like a matching footstool, not unlike an Eames situation. And I was like, I have found the perfect hybrid of the Eames chair and the Martin chair. And it was $70 and it lived in our apartment in San Francisco for 3 years and we weren't able to move it home. And I absolutely think about it every day. It was like the great hybrid Fraser set chair. And whenever anyone came to the apartment, that's very like, I'm like, I know what you're going to say. I know what you're going to say.
I already know you're my people because you know where that chair's from.
That's why you got this far. Because you saw the chair and went, oh, like a Fraser. Yes, it's like a Fraser chair. So look, I mean, it's amazing how, I also, something I love about doing Juvenilia, you never fucking get to talk about this shit. Like, I love Frasier. I never get to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that we have designated this period of time to just talk about this and no one's going to wander and talk about something else that's like, no one's going to talk about fucking UFC here. Like, we're just going to talk about Frasier.
We will never talk about UFC here. I'm going to make that guarantee now.
Did you hear that?
Even if it's 10 years from now and someone is the champ, the president, because Conor McGregor inspired them, they will not be talking about UFC.
What's the scandal with Conor McGregor? I'm staying with my brother in Dublin at the moment and, you know, he just loves him. And I don't even understand what's happened.
Like, I would say he's a modern metrosexual, you know, in his hypermasculinity. Yeah. He has a tattoo of a tiger on his belly. I would love to do that.
Are we pro him then?
I don't know.
He's really sexist.
I feel like really a Kardashian sexist. Neutrality, and we're like, that's weird that that's happening.
Yeah,
but like, he hates women. Of course he does hate women. You know what I mean? Of course he does.
Yeah. I mean, he beats people up for a living.
Yeah,
they don't typically love women unless they're Rocky.
Oh, Adrian.
Rocky was my other consideration for subject I was going to speak about in the show.
You're going to be coming back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that's it now.
Honorary one family member
us.
Now, yeah.
Oh, you're one nice. Of us. Yeah. Move to Ireland and become like the fourth co-host. So we can do like a round table every time.
Yeah.
If only we could just set up a panel show every week, like with all of the people who are amazing on it, and we could just have this massive long table like the Last Supper of fucking nostalgia.
It's like, do you know, I mean, if I can just spend a couple of minutes fangirling with the shit out of you. I like, and I've told you this before definitely, but like I've been living in London for the last 6 years and I was definitely, I don't really have very many Irish friends. I have one that I went to, like, I lived with when I was in college or whatever, and we see each other fairly frequently, but apart from that, there's nothing. And I don't really keep up with Irish stuff generally until I was going through this period where I felt really homesick and really unmoored, and like I had a lot of friends who had been friends for a long time in England, kind of thing. And I'm sure you know that feeling, you know what I mean, where you're just kind of the interloper or you're the blow-in
or the Daphne Moon.
Oh, the Daphne Moon, exactly. Oh my god, exactly. and then like I was just getting really homesick, and for some reason I just came across you. I think so they followed Alan on Twitter already, and I just came across Juvenilia, and it was, I just listened to every single episode, and like hearing people talk about like the den and like really specific things, and like just going on a mass like follow fest for everyone you interview and everyone you talk about. And like my experience of both as an Irish person and as a person on the internet has improved magnanimously since then. Like I just feel like, oh, there's cool shit happening in Dublin right now. And like, I would be a fool not to get involved. Do you know what I mean?
That is so good.
Thank you.
That is magic. Yeah.
Feels like this, like I feel like a new home has been slowly forming out of like things I'm interested in, out of like debris and like whatever. And now it's just there for me.
It's the Muppet Theory, man. It's Muppets Tonight. It's where else in the world would a bear, a pig, a frog, a king prawn, whatever the fuck Gonzo is, like where else would they all get together other than making something? Like where else would all of these people find each other other than in a place where we can build something?
That's and beautiful. Did you just come up with that?
No, I think about that all the time. Okay. Like,
do you know, I think about it all the time. Yeah. RE Muppets.
Yes, let's go.
Is I think there are essentially two different kinds of people in the world. There are Muppets and there are actors in the Muppet films.
Whoa.
Yeah. The people who are like controlling the plot and being like, here's what we're doing now. And the people who are like, ah! Ah!
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, you can have elements of both, but you're generally, you can't be a Gryffindor and a Ravenclaw. You're a Muppet or you're an actor in a Muppet movie. Mm.
That's it.
I'll leave it to you guys to decide who you are, but I think we all know.
But I think we all know. And that's what I feel for me, what Shubhini has done for me. And what, like, I mean, we kind of joke a lot about like Irish Twitter and nice Twitter and all that bullshit. But like doing this, building this with Alan and Ellen, like, has been remarkable in that my job is extremely solitary, like, and I use the internet, but I do largely spend a lot of time hanging around with blank paper and waiting for emails. Like, that's kind of my gig.
Same,
you know. And doing this has been it's just been fucking unbelievable. Like, it gives something to look forward to.
Kind of what my thinking was when I came up with the idea for it was that it feels like we're just on the brink of a load of people of a similar cohort about to explode, like you and Ellen and Caroline and Deirdre and Sinead Burke and Jean Sutton
and you, Ellen.
All these people.
And you, yeah.
And I just want to kind of get all of them on tape just before because everybody, I feel like every single Germanator guest is going to be huge in some way or another.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about all of them.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little snapshot of
a time.
Ireland just before this new thing is about to happen. How I feel about it.
That's the sweetest.
That's oh my god, like. That's amazing. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Nice.
Like it just. Oh my god. We haven't. I don't think we've ever actually had an in our feelings type episode, but here we are. Yeah, that's it. It feels like belonging to something, and that is an incredibly rare feeling when you're a person who makes things up for a living. Or to be honest, anyone who feels like a weirdo or an outsider or someone who spent a lot of time in school just at home and, you know, people who are who loved Frasier and people who were like really into fucking weird farming simulators or fucking like that.
Because I think for so many people, cultural memories are stronger than their own actual memories. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, or sometimes you remember like that time Niles and Lula got together because whatever what was happening with you that year, you didn't want to commit a lot of memory. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was my Arrested Development period.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched Arrested Development when I was 19. It was an interesting a year that every time I describe it, it feels weirder and weirder.
I know that feeling.
I had a 4-year relationship. It was great during my teens, but because we were teenagers, he met somebody else, which is normal.
Right.
But her father was found dead in the bottom of a lake the weekend that he and I broke up, which also happened to be Valentine's weekend. And that year, several people around me passed away quite quickly, young people.
Sorry.
And look, we're all adults now. Yeah. But it was very strange. So I just decided to start watching Arrested Development. Mm. Now I can't find it funny, but I also know everything about it. You know, so you find yourself transported to these places that are somewhere. It's escapists, is what it is. It's cultural escapism. So your
that's
memories,
absolutely what it is.
and that's where what Frasier is for me as well. Is that it's this huge alternate landscape that you can sit in and understand the nuances of. And maybe this is why it doesn't feel like a problematic fave. You know, because it means something. And when meaning starts going beyond analysis.
Yes.
Maybe that's
Frasier would love this conversation, by the way.
Do you ever wonder how you grew up the way you were? I'm like, yeah, obviously I was going to fucking turn out like this, you know? Like, it becomes, it's a transportation thing. Or, you know what I mean? You become just moved somewhere else.
The way you feel about Arrested Development is exactly how I feel about Parks and Rec. I don't watch that show ever now because a couple of years ago I went through a massive breakup and it was massive emotionally, but it was also massive financially in that we lived together and he was earning a lot more money than me and we broke our lease, so we had to pay fine or whatever, essentially, and I had to borrow money off my boss to pay this fine. And I just like had, I went from living with this guy who I thought was I was going to marry someday to being in a 5-person house share in London and having no money.
Whoa.
And I was just watching Parks and Rec just chaining it, literally. I remember being in that flat after he had moved out and I was still there and all the furniture had gone, and I was just on this bare mattress watching Parks and Rec. And I was watching, like, a change of, like, 3 seasons in like a weekend or whatever. And I called my friend and I was like, out of nowhere, being like, I thought we were Amy Poehler and Ben's girl. I thought we were Leslie and Ben, but we weren't. We were Chris and Anne.
Oh my God.
We were Chris and Anne. We were never going to work out because Chris and Anne don't work out.
Yeah.
And now whenever I think of that show, I just think of like a blurry, hazy, melancholic time peppered by laughter. Yeah.
Like, that's it. It's not what it's intended for. It becomes something else because of how you are when you receive it.
I wonder what it feels like to be on one of those shows. Whoa. And to like to be walking around as Kelsey Grammer and to have people come up to you and be like, you know, I had 3 miscarriages while your show was on and you were the only thing that like took me out of the blackness. Like,
well, actually, I went to see at Sketchfest a few years ago. I went to see a news radio roundtable. Right.
Yes.
So it was Andy Dick. I also went to see a Bored to Death one, which was fucking amazing.
I love Bored to Death.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was amazing. I was just like, row three, putting my eyeballs onto Jason Schwartzman. It was a beautiful time for all of us. I had my fun. But at the news radio one, which was fucking jammed during the questions and answers section, like, it's an, getting the cast of news radio back together is very odd because obviously Phil Hartman passed away during, like, tragically during the shooting of it, you know? So getting that whole that cast back together is an interesting and complicated place because there's certain things I can't really talk about, you know? And it's generally minus Joe Rogan as well. So, but the audience is full of people telling the actors what they meant. That's my nightmare. That is, I would never tell anybody, I would never say that to any of the actors, ever. Like, I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I think it's incredibly bold and brave, and it must be cathartic for the people who do stop Kelsey Grammer and say, hey, you got me through this time. I couldn't.
But we've all been at those, whether it's at an author thing or a film thing or whatever, where there's a Q&A and somebody stands up and asks that, basically does a long, long statement that's not a question. Mm. And it's, you're like dying in your seat because, oh my God, like, this person, what's wrong with them or whatever. And you kind of realize when you go to enough of them that it's not about what they're saying. They just want to be seen by the person that means that much to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it because it's a easier way to say, like, you saved my life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But that kind of shatters the fourth wall. Like, for example, if they were to do a Fraser roundtable or a Fraser panel, I wouldn't go. I wouldn't know. I'm like, this is what I'm saying about not having seen the end of it.
Yeah.
It exists in a place. A beautiful, timeless, static, well-furnished, well-dressed.
Rented Eames chair.
Rented Eames fucking chair. David Howard Pearce in his 20s. Like, that kind.
How young he was?
He was like late 20s. He was like 30 or something. He was like my age. I am old. You know what I mean?
You're Niles Crane's age.
Oh my God.
Niles Crane's.
Surprise. Plot twist. Maris. That's it. That's who you grew up into. But he's Fraser's little brother. So he was a good bit younger. It exists there. And that's why, for me, it's void of cultural criticism.
Yeah. Mm. Absolutely.
Like, it's not real. It's something else. I don't know.
So, do you have any final thoughts?
We've gone deep with this.
Sorry, Alan.
I've enjoyed the hell out of it. So everybody else has as well. I didn't talk much because I just enjoy listening to people talk.
I know. I feel really bad if I've talked over you this entire time.
No, not at all. It shows about
you
and what you think about the thing you've picked. That's what the show was about.
And apparently being Caroline's burgeoning teamwork.
Yeah.
But Alan was doing a Twitter roast recently and made this excellent point. She's like, Sarah, did you ever overthink anything extremely? You know, and I was like, yeah. That's what this was, so sorry.
Okay. But I've enjoyed it immensely. It's lived up to my every dream.
Aww. Yay.
Come back again.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So,
do you have any closing thoughts? I feel like I want a closing monologue from you because I haven't heard much from you.
A closing monologue.
Maybe I hear the blue, the cold. Gather.
Quite stylish.
Let's end it there. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Caroline O'Donoghue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah Marie Griffin.
Thanks, Caroline and Alan. Cheers.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 There's so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side. Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide.
So there we go. Sarah's still here.
Hi.
Caroline's still here.
Yes.
I'm eating rancheros.
And opening a large bottle
of wine.
Also, our producer Brian is still here.
Oh, hang on. Was that not Prosecco? Is that still?
It says Prosecco.
Oh, I can see bubbles. I'm happy now. So I was worried for a minute there.
So we're here to say thank you to some people. Thank you to Dee McDonald for the artwork.
Thank
as always.
You, you're amazing.
We would like you to subscribe to Juvenalia.
Yeah, we would really like you to subscribe.
We haven't even drank yet.
Yeah, we're starting to drink and we would really like you to subscribe to Juvenalia. It makes a big difference. It makes us more visible in the charts and it gets more nerds out of the woodwork to listen to things that maybe they like as much as we like them.
Yeah, and thanks to Headstuff for hosting us, and thanks to Brian for producing us and making really nice coffee for us and just being a very nice
putting
man.
A velvet cloth over the table so that I don't destroy it with my fists of rage.
We're going to use that to play poker now.
Yeah, so. That's what we're doing. We're drinking and playing poker and eating biscuits.
So thank you and goodbye, everybody. Oh, wait, no, wait. There's more thing. The Headstuff Podcast Network. You got to, it's on YouTube. And Brian's nodding at me to tell me to do more things. That's follow that on Twitter and YouTube. So all the
it's
other
at Headstuff Network, isn't it? Type it into the search bar, you'll find
it. Type Headstuff Podcast Network, and all the episodes of Juvenalia are on YouTube now. So,
oh my god, are we?
Yeah, like not now, but
will be.
Like, yeah, they will be.
That's amazing. There's a lot of other really great podcasts on the Headstuff Network,
and
you should listen to them and support them.
If you haven't heard it before, you should listen to Alison Spittle's Chat Rooms podcast, which is a gem for the soul of the heart.
One that we've been bonding over here is the fan favorite Alison Spittle episode of Juvenalia. She has a show on the Headstuff Network and is great. Also, you should tune into her.
Okay, that's probably everything. We'll leave you go. Bye, everybody.
Godspeed.
Bye.